Welcome, welcome. Episode 39 here of Phoenix Suns Podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. This is Chris Havis, as always, coming at you with some podcasting knowledge. We're going to wrap up the Pacific Division previews here today. If you haven't heard them, go back through. We had the SB Nation family and networks, if we want to call them that, come through and really help us out with gaining some intimate knowledge on probably what would consider the favorites in the Los Angeles Clippers, and then right underneath them, the Golden State Warriors. And then followed that up, we also spoke with the Sacramento Kings to talk about what it felt like being in the basement, but having much more talent than what the Phoenix Suns currently have. They're a little bit further along in their rebuild. And then now we're going to close it out with, I guess you want to call it the Diva team. This is by no plan, design, or organization, but the Lakers wrapping up the series here with talking about the Pacific Division and kind of cleaning everything out. And, you know, there's some up and down opinions on this team, so we decided to bring in Silver Screen and Roll of the SB Nation family and networks to break everything down and kind of see what we should be expecting from the mighty, the great, the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm sure the Suns fans are excited to hear about the Lakers straight from the horse's mouth there and see if we can get some expectations for the team. Now, with episode 39, you know, kind of going back with the 30s, I mean, it's just not a very historically relevant NBA number. Once you get past like 33, 34, 35, you start to get into numbers that don't really have a lot of historical significance. And, you know, the Suns, the Lakers, not really a lot of connection to the number 39. The NBA has only seen Tom Tolbert, the one and only Greg Ostertag, and Zarko Rabracha. I probably butchered his name, but I know he played with Atlanta, a few other teams, big man, so from Europe. That's it for the number 39. Cool thing with the number 39, though, is that this thing called the 39 Clues, if you guys haven't heard about that, it's some action-adventure series. I've never read it personally, but one of the cool things while researching the number 39, it's about 39 ingredients that you mix together to create the most powerful person on Earth. And if you are one of the members of the bus family, what you probably think is you mix 39 ingredients together and you create the Los Angeles Lakers, because those guys have dominated the NBA over the years, and they have been the franchise outside of maybe Boston to model after in terms of winning. The team has been around for, you know, 60 plus years, going into their 60th or 61st season this year, have won the NBA Finals 16 times, been in it, you know, handfuls of more times after that. You know, a team that just they define winning. Right now, going through probably a little bit of a rough patch. Had a huge shakeup this summer, so we're going to bring on SilverScreenAndRoll.com, the SB Nation Family and Networks Los Angeles Lakers site. Tons of great content, lots of great stuff from these guys. Drew Garrison is going to step in, fill us in on the Lakers franchise, let us know what's going on with them, the ins and the outs, and everything that has to do with the Los Angeles Lakers. Drew, how are you doing here this summer after all the change and everything going on with the Los Angeles Lakers?
I myself am doing fine. Thank you for having me on. But as far as the Lakers go, I'd be lying if I said it's not disappointing. It was a very disappointing season for the summer and season, really, for the Lakers. You know, we lost that center you might have heard of named Dwight Howard, and the subsequent moves basically turned the roster into one-year contract guys who I've labeled one-year, why not, let's see guys. So, yeah, no, pretty disappointing summer from transitioning from a pretty disappointing season. So, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, training camp's coming up, so I'll be kind of curious to see how these guys play together.
Yeah, and you know what? Interesting thing that I've been thinking about with the whole Dwight Howard situation since you brought it up is, so you lose Dwight Howard, and I'm sure that there's some Lakers fans out there that sold themselves into, you know, it's better for them to not have him, which is, you know, silly, but kind of right in some regard. But with this team, I mean, do they, with one of these one-year Band-Aids, do you just switch Powell back over to the center position, or are you playing two bigs again? I mean, how do you resolve the center situation sans Dwight?
Well, I think the thing is that the Lakers really don't have much of a choice but to run basically two centers. But, I mean, I personally believe that the front court should be Pau Gasol and Jordan Hill with Chris Kaman coming off the bench. I just don't think you can play Pau Gasol and Chris Kaman together. Sure, they can both, you know, stretch the floor a little bit, and Chris Kaman can play more in their mid-range while Pau Gasol commands the post. But defensively, that's just murder. They just cannot play defense together. So I think at the end of the day, they got a handful of these guys like Marcus Landry and Elias Harris, and they drafted Ryan Kelly. So we have all these guys who, you know, they could maybe fill in as like a stretch four type and help them out a little bit in that regard. But, you know, it's just all these guys are kind of unknown quantities outside of Kamen and Gasol. And Jordan Hill isn't, while he can play power forward, he doesn't have, he can't stretch the floor. And, you know, that's kind of the problem the Lakers are going to run into.
Yeah, and I mean, with Ryan Kelly, may or may not even make the roster with all the injuries and everything.
Right.
I thought it was an amazing pick when they got him. They're like, oh, that's perfect. You know, just have him come off, you know, play 7 to 10 minutes a game at the absolute most and just chuck up a couple of threes a game at the absolute most, and they got a value there.
Let's be a trailer three guy, you know, and he'd be great to take him pop, stand, literally just stand at the top of the arc or in the corner and put up threes. That is your only responsibility. But yeah, the foot injury kind of put a damper on it, you know. You know, with the 48th pick overall, you know, it's really all you can ask for is getting a guy who can possibly fit in the system and put up something. And he fit that bill, but, you know, the health is a problem, you know. And foot injuries with Bigman is a pretty bad indication.
Yeah, and you know, so you go from having potentially Dwight Howard and then, you know, maybe Ryan Kelly is like your fifth, sixth big man off the bench. I mean, he wasn't going to play a dominating role, obviously, but you go from having them to not having them with all these one-year Band-Aids, as you mentioned, and talking about these guys that you guys added to the roster. I mean, is there anyone in particular that you're actually excited to see that they picked up and brought in?
Yes, absolutely. I think Jordan Farmar is the most exciting player they brought in this summer, and not just because he was a former Laker and, you know, past glory. I could really care less about that. When you look at Jordan Farmar and you look at the situation he's going into, he should be able to soak a good deal of minutes behind both of the thieves, considering that Nash's minutes should be limited, to say the least, and how both Steve Blake and Steve Nash had this affinity for being injured, at least last season. You know, that's kind of a problem the Lakers have had with, you know, despite how many point guards they've had. They had to play, you know, Darius Morris and Chris Duhon serious minutes last season. So, yeah, they have Jordan Farmar kind of on the bench, and he can do a lot. I think, you know, put him in an up-tempo system, and you put him in a pick-and-roll heavy system with Mike D'Antoni, and he should really kind of flourish, actually. I think, you know, his three-point shooting has drastically improved since he's gone overseas and played with the Nets and such. And he's a lot more aggressive with finding a shot, unlike Steve Blake. You know, Farmer will attack the rim, and he'll use those screens and kind of put pressure on the defense. And I'm very excited to see Farmer. And I honestly, you know, he's on that one-year contract, and, you know, it's one and done, and they go out and get their new money. Farmer is the kind of player, and, you know, he says he came back to L.A. to and he gave up a bunch of money overseas, but he could easily play himself out of a contract next season with the Lakers if he does well.
Yeah, and play himself into a solid contract, as you're saying there. Mm-hmm. Some of the other guys that you bring in, you look at Xavier Henry, you got Wes Johnson, you got Nick Young. When you look at this core group of wings, basically, so you have Jordan Farmar as maybe the backup or the third string point guard, however you want to label him, when you have Nash and Blake. With the wings there, how does that band-aid the loss of Ron Artest, if it does at all?
Yeah, it really doesn't, because, like, I think when you look at Nick Young, he's more of a shooting guard than a small forward. When you look at Wesley Johnson, you guys have looked at him plenty, and he's not really panned out as far as being, you know, a fourth overall type selection. And you got to wonder who on the Lakers is going to defend Carmelo Anthony? Who on the Lakers is going to defend LeBron James? Who on the Lakers is going to defend Kevin Durant? And they don't really have any defensive wing players, and that's going to be a big challenge. And that's where you're going to really see where the Lakers are going to hurt, because they'll get killed on isolation in the perimeter, and they're going to get blown by to the rim, and they don't have that weak side help defender or just overall help defender that they had in Dwight Howard to help seal the paint off. So it's going to be a difficult situation for the Lakers defense. While Ron Artest or Meta World Peace or whatever you want to call him, you know, wasn't the defensive player of the year that he used to be, he was still a physical defender, and he was still proud of ball handler and, you know, make them work at the very least. And they don't really have that guy anymore.
And when you look at it now, it almost, that is going to fall depending on when he comes back. Is the perimeter defensive load, does that now fall on Kobe Bryant?
let's just be honest. Kobe Bryant has always in his career been that roaming free safety type, and dabbled in the passing lane and kind of lost track of his assignment on the perimeter. But he's a reasonable isolation defender when he's really crowding the ball handler and all that. I just don't see him doing that consistently, though. And if I was the opposing team, and that's what the Lakers are doing with Kobe Bryant, I'm giving the ball to, you know, LeBron or Melo or Durant every time down the floor, and I'm just going to grind him out.
Yeah, because when you look at the Western Conference, not even just looking at the top, I mean, we obviously, you mentioned Durant and a few of those guys, but you also have, you know, James Harden, you have the perimeter groups,
yep,
that Denver and Golden State, and even teams like Portland and New Orleans that are trying to make some noise in the West, even they have really talented perimeter core groups that they have right now. They're going to put a lot of pressure mm-hmm. on a team like the Lakers. It starts almost a 40-year-old backcourt, basically.
Yeah, it's going to be a disaster on defense, and you know, I'm realistic about the season. I don't have any expectations. You know, it's going to be what it's going to be. But I am definitely never going to talk myself into this group of players being a good defensive team. And, you know, it's going to be tough. And I think one of these guys, you know, whether it's Johnson or Young, or if, I mean, it's just so hard to pay one of them being a good defensive player or a reliable defensive player. If one of them can step up, even if it's one of these non-guaranteed type guys like Marcus Landry or one of them, if they can step up and prove to be a physical defender on the perimeter and be a plus on that end, then I think they'll earn some minutes with D'Antoni. But, you know, it remains to be seen. This other roster has a lot of question marks.
Yeah, you know what? And the saying is, a picture can tell 1,000 words, right? And I think just with a pause and a laugh from a Lakers writer there, I think that tells like an opus of a novel of a Lord of the Rings-esque type trilogy when you talk about the Lakers. Because it's almost, and it's, you know, with the Phoenix Suns, that's kind of what it was with us last year, and a lot of it with us this year, where you ask us a question and it's, yeah, okay, so let's talk about this, because it's not going to be anything positive. Just kind of take that deep breath and move forward with it. But with the Lakers, I mean, ESPN, you know, I've been using the summer forecast just as a tool just to kind of see where people think that they're going to land and how well their teams are going to be. They have the Lakers 36-46, 9 wins off of last year's pace, and, you know, as the 12th best team in the Western Conference, meaning, you know, a couple of spots out of the playoffs. You know, with 36 being the over-under, is that a good betting line there? Do you think they're going over or under that?
I think it's a perfectly fair betting line. I really don't expect them to make the playoffs. Whether it be going over or under, that's tough. That's really tough, because you still kind of think that, like, maybe if Nash is healthy and Pau Gasol is healthy and Kobe Bryant comes back within, you know, a reasonable time frame, they could still probably put together, you know, 36 wins. But if I was going to bet, I would go with the under. I'd go with the under. That feels like the safer bet.
And with Kobe Bryant, rumblings that he's going to try and get on the court during the preseason, be available for the first game of the season, is that just, you know, smoke and mirrors, or do you think that he's actually going to try and force himself on the court too early?
I believe that he is ahead of schedule, for sure. I believe that he is doing everything he can to get on the court as soon as possible. And I believe that, I mean, if I had to bet another bet, if I had to bet on whether he'd be playing opening night, I'd bet on him playing opening night. It's just the gut feeling I have, and everything, you know, obviously follow the story from point A to point Z, or we're not at Z yet, but from point A to point W, I guess, at this point. It just seems like everything's been very optimistic and very positive. The team has been kind of cautious from their messages, but Kobe's been very blunt about how far ahead he is and how well he's doing. So it just seems like this is an injury he could be back for in time to start the actual season. Now, whether or not that's too soon with the injury, that's really the thing the Lakers need to monitor. And that's where they need to put trust into their training staff to make the right call on whether he should return as soon as possible or take his time to get back.
Yeah, when you, with Kobe Bryant, it's almost like a mirroring situation with, in my opinion, with Dirk Nowitzki, where it's two guys that make a ton of money. They're clearly still superstar-level talents, but they're more on the back end of that list. They're coming up on the end of their contract last year. Next year, they'll be technically free agents, able to leave, but they're identities of the team that they're on. Is that even something you think the team would ever explore, letting him go if he was willing to come back and play? I think he said he has at least 3 more years in him or something like that not that long ago.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is that I think with the way the kind of the the temperature is with the way the fans feel about the front office and with the loss of the great Dr. Jerry Buss and with the very low confidence in Jim Buss right now, I would say, especially after the D'Antoni thing and Phil Jackson and all that. I think that if they let Kobe walk to another team and he plays another 3 years and he plays at a reasonable level, which is, I would believe that's a pretty fair, if he plays at a reasonable level for the next 3 years, which I think isn't out of question, it's going to be another huge PR blow because so many fans are going to be furious that the Lakers didn't bring back Kobe Bryant. And I think this is where you're going to start seeing kind of with the Lakers fan base, a separation of Kobe fans and Lakers fans. And while they're not always mutually exclusive, you know, it could very well be in the Lakers' best interest to not pay Kobe Bryant $30 million over the next 3 years if he isn't able to produce at that level. And they have obviously a lot to consider with all that cap space they've had, they're going to have. And it's just a really tough situation. And until they see him play and until we see, you know, how sustainable his level of play will be if he gets to a high level, the Lakers won't really have an idea as a front office. So I would say that given the choice and if he does play well, the front office would be kind of stupid not to keep him because of the PR blowback and because of the merchandise and the sales and the tickets and the season ticket holders. They would be much lower and they would have such a disaster on their hands.
Obviously, the passing of Dr. Buss is a big deal and it's going to crack the foundation of a team to an extent, but it feels like the blowback with that, the people taking over and running the team. I mean, what is the future of when you look at guys like Kupchak and D'Antoni? Is there a future with those guys on this team beyond maybe this or next season?
It's hard to see Kupchak going. If Kupchak goes, I don't imagine it'll be because of a Jim Buss type decision. It would be because he got offered another job elsewhere. And he was just like, all right, well, this has been a circus show over these last few years, and I'm ready to take my talents elsewhere. And, you know, he has kind of the respect of being one of the better GMs, but it'd be very curious to see him away from the Lakers to see what he could pull off. You know, nothing's guaranteed. You know, you go to another organization, you're not in that large market, you're not in L.A., and you don't have that kind of Lakers luster, I guess you could say, to help you grab these free agents. So that would be very curious to see. But, you know, it's hard to see him going unless he chooses to. And as far as D'Antoni, I would say that he's got two more years on that deal. And, you know, obviously his first season didn't pan out, whether it's his fault or not. You know, that roster and that team was just cursed. Things did not go well. This year, I don't know how you can expect him to really succeed with this team. It would be like, it would be really unfair, just like, hey, you know, Mike, this isn't working out this year. You know, you're not putting up 45 wins with Wesley Johnson and Xavier Henry. What's wrong? You know, that's not really fair to D'Antoni. So it's just so tough. I think what the Lakers want to look at is if they believe after 2 years and dealing with him from a front office perspective and how he manages players and what his coaching staff can establish, if he's the coach that they can go into these next two summers, pitching the players come play for, you know, ex player and Mike D'Antoni come play for the Lakers and go out the D'Antoni coach team. Is he going to be sellable? Are players going to want to play for him? Is he going to be the guy who can get it done? And unfortunately, he's not going to have a prime window to show Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak what he can do as a coach because this roster going into the upcoming season isn't very good. And last season they were injured, and when they were together, there were just chemistry issues, as you know many would put it. And even when they were playing together and semi-healthy, they were never fully healthy. So he never had that fair shot. And you know, it's just it's unfortunate for him. So it's so hard to tell. But if I had to, again, if I had to put money on it, I would say D'Antoni's out after this upcoming season.
Kind of looking at the roster, and I'm glad you mentioned that. The Lakers right now, all the one-year contracts and all the guys that kind of just got brought in as Band-Aids and everything, when you look at this roster, do you get the vibe that this could easily be a kind of a self-destructive season with a lot of selfish play and guys just trying to show off and basically audition for their next contract?
Yeah, I mean, I think when your concern with that is going to be kind of with Nick Young, obviously, because he's a known gunner, and your concern with that is going to be maybe in Chris Kamen, who while he isn't like a premier front court player, he took a pretty big pay cut. He's making 3.5, and for the serviceable type of center play he can provide to the team, he definitely took a pay cut, and he's only on a 1 year. So he can try to, you know, show off his skills a little bit. But I think with the point guard play, when they have, you know, Steve Nash running the show and they have a system, which like last season they ran a lot of horn sets, and that kind of, you look stupid if you try to take a possession out of like a horn set and you're not following the play, because it requires so much execution and, you know, setting a screen, getting to your spot and taking a shot if you're open. And you have the point guards in position like Steve Blake and Steve Nash, who aren't selfish, and they'll get the ball to where it needs to go. So, you know, short of, you know, those handful of isolation plays on the perimeter that make you roll your eyes, it's kind of hard to see a team being taken over by the Nick Youngs and such.
This team's identity is obviously going to come down to, can D'Antoni get this team to outscore other teams consistently enough to win games? And we both agree mid-30s is probably an appropriate destination for this team at the end of the day. But Coach Jeff Hornacek out here talks about potentially averaging 103 points per game. Now, the one thing the Lakers have that the Suns don't have, they have a couple of guys who are proven commodities, but more than that, they have guys that can actually knock down a three occasionally. The Phoenix Suns could historically hit low heights here with the kind of shooters that they have on the roster right now. Is this a team capable, though, of putting up maybe 103, 104 points per game? Last year, they were at about 102.2.
I think they're capable of putting up similar offensive numbers. You got to figure out, though, how you're going to get, you know, what is like 18 points from Dwight Howard last season? Those touches that he had have to go somewhere. And, you know, I think when you have that front court, again, it goes back to kind of the roster. Kamen and Gasol should be a really good offensive front court because they can both play from the elbows, they can both play in the post, and you could tell Chris Kamen, hey, go stand in the mid-range and give Kyle Gasol space. Where with Dwight Howard, you literally had to, like, D'Antoni literally had to tell him, you stand out of bounds behind the backboard and kind of get a cut angle on offensive rebounds to be effective. So, you know, they'll have a little bit more utility in Kamen. Jordan Farmer off the bench should be a pretty solid addition for them. Nick Young, you know, he's a proven shot taker. I don't know so much about a shot maker, but he'll put up shots. And, you know, you have a guy like Steve Nash, and if he's healthy, you know, you don't know. It's definitely a team that can put up points, but they're kind of like you just said, they're going to have to outscore opponents because they're not going to stop them on defense.
Is there any chance this team floats lower than maybe that 12th seed like we're talking about? I mean, is this realistically a team that could challenge maybe the Phoenix or the Sacramentos of the world for that bottom spot in the West?
I think there's anything that's possible about how far this team could fall, because all it takes is one injury and one injury to Paul Gasol, one injury to Kobe Bryant, one slow recovery from Kobe Bryant, one injury to Steve Nash, and this team is really going to struggle. So if the team is healthy and they go into the season, and let's just say Kobe gets in there, you know, let's say a month after the season starts, And I don't see them being on the bottom end of the ladder. But if any of those negative things happen, which is very possible with their age and miles and situation from last season, they could easily be even further down than 12th, I would say.
Well, you mentioned injuries, but the other side of the coin is, I mean, does a guy like Pau Gasol finish this season in a different jersey with him being an expiring contract and one of the more serviceable big men in the league? I mean, one of the better big men in the league.
And that's a really fair question because, you know, the Lakers have flirted with trading him. Heck, they did trade him at one point before, you know. So, and now he's an expiring contract. And are they going to ship him out now and try to cash in on, you know, giving, a contending team a very good, very skilled big man on their team who's not selfish, who can pass from the elbow, who can kind of stretch the floor, and who's still one of the best post players in the low post? You know, I could definitely see there being a market for Pau Gasol, and if the Lakers have absolutely no intention on trying to re-sign him cheap, you know, when he becomes a free agent this summer, then, you know, it would be a disservice to the franchise if Mitch Kupchak didn't entertain offers. And it's hard to imagine there won't be a good enough offer. And, you know, I guess this really comes down to how the team is performing, because if they look like they're still in playoff range, they might try to push. But if they're not, then there would be no reason not to try to shop them and try to get something for the future, whether it's a young role player or, you know, some type of draft picks, you know, anything like that. If Kyle Sewell is not coming back and this is something they'll have to decide on before trading him at the trade deadline, then there's no reason to keep him.
And when you look at Pau Gasol, and obviously, you know, we're talking about older players when we're talking about the Lakers with their core three, but, I mean, as a guy like Pau Gasol, is it not worth a trade of him to maybe take a flyer on a young player, like maybe looking at something like a Evan Fournier or a Quincy Miller or, you know, those kind of players like a Denver? Like, you can look at a team like Denver, maybe even New Orleans. They have some young assets, maybe throw in like a conditional pick and then grab a guy like Pau Gasol and see if they can make some noise in the Western Conference. Those are two teams that can probably afford to give away some young players, bring in Pau, and he would fit right into their system. I mean, what would be too little for Pau Gasol? What would be like a fair trade, I guess, is the right question.
You know, that's really tough to say because you don't want to sell too low because, like, you can get Evan Fournier, right? But, like, is he worth trading Pau Gasol for? I don't know. I mean, you have a young guy, but is he a guy that you want on your team? Is he going to develop into something? And that's kind of the tough part in the Lakers front office. They have to really scout some of these young players and do their homework to see what they're worth. And, you know, a lot of these guys, obviously, you have to really, you know, watch film, watch game, and get a better feel of because they're young and they're fighting for minutes on their team. They're getting, you know, 7 to 10 minutes a night. And it's really hard to say, all right, well, all right, fans, we traded Pau Gasol for Evan Fournier. You know, it'd be a tough pill to swallow. But with that said, you know, if it's the right guy and you can get in, you know, top 15 or something, protected pick, you know, that's what I think the Lakers would try to push for, at least the top 15 protected type pick, then I think you'd do it because they absolutely need young players and they need the rookie deals on their salary going forward. It's no longer the land of, you know, three players soaking up, you know, $50 million of salary. You got to be very conscious about this. And, you know, they're getting out of this nightmare and they've been strapped for cash for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years at the least. And now they're finally getting in the position where they can make moves during the summer and try to start building a new roster. So, yeah, I think draft picks are of utmost importance to the Lakers. And if they can get any type of first-round pick out of Pau Gasol plus a potential role player that they see, you know, promising, then I think they should pull the trigger.
Yeah, and one underlying story, which is clearly not the top bullet point, it's probably like a little bit further down in the bullet points, maybe the third to fifth bullet point, is you also don't want to offend Kobe to an extent. I know that comes off like making it seem very selfish for Kobe, but I mean, he's good friends with Pau. He's got to sign a new contract. At the end of the day, he's got to put his signature down. So you don't want to necessarily trade Pau Gasol, like you said, for Evan Fournier and a conditional second round pick. And then Kobe looks at you like, wow, you guys have no idea what you're doing. I'm going to have to go and take my talents to, I don't know, the Washington Bullets and play Michael Jordan 2.0 again. You got to be careful with that, but yeah, this Lakers team is pretty interesting. We talked about the wins and losses. What would be your overall prediction for this team? Like you said, you don't have high expectations. You're just kind of going into the season. What would be your overall benchmark for wins for this team as your prediction?
Benchmark wins?
Yeah, for this team. Like, what would be your prediction for this team realistically, in your opinion?
My realistic opinion is they'll end up with about 35 to 38 wins. And I think that really depends on you know, Kobe's injury and all that. So 35 to 38 wins, and, you know, there's no playoffs this season in Los Angeles, not least for the Lakers. We'll have to watch the Clippers and Staples.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe at that point, David Stern, with a wink and a nod for basketball reasons, will have the Los Angeles Lakers win the number one overall pick in the lottery, and we'll all be laughing about this.
And you know what? Like, I argue about this a lot. I've always said, you know, getting a this draft coming in, and I'm sure you obviously, you guys have surely looked into it too. You know, this draft coming in is just stock full of talent. And if you can get into, you know, the top seven, top six of this draft, you're going to get a player that has a lot of promise. And you're going to get a very quality talent. And it's not just Wiggins, there's Parker, there's Randall, Harrison Twins, Gordon. There's a lot of guys that are coming into the NBA out of this draft, you know, supposedly, that should be able to be at least a second, you know, second type player in team, you know, the second, not the number one player, but at least the number two player on your team. So, yeah, you definitely want to, or if you're Lakers, you definitely want to get into that area if you're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, and when you have Kobe Bryant basically being able to play, like you said, for 2 to 3 more years at a serviceable, maybe 75 to 80% of Kobe of old type play, and you know, bring along a young guy to be the face of the franchise. Getting a top 10 pick in this year's class, I mean, even I would even stretch it out to the top 10. You might be able to get a guy that can either take the reins or at least be that number two guy and really be there to affect the franchise for years. Well, Drew, appreciate the time and appreciate the insight on the Lakers. Where can people catch you in terms of like Twitter? Where can they read you? What do you got coming out soon?
Well, you can definitely catch me on Twitter at Drew Garrison SBN. You can also catch my Lakers focused writing on SB Nation Silver Screen and Roll. And you can also catch any of my stuff on SB Nation NBA. I do a lot of work there, and we're working on our actual NBA preview series. Me, Mike Prada, Jonathan Tartt, Ricky O'Donnell, Tom Ziller, and Paul Flannery. We're working on, you know, a big NBA preview, kind of like they did with the NFL. So that'll be starting. We're starting our launch on Pieces this coming Monday, so I'll keep an eye out on that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just glad you didn't mention Seth on there. So it's just, it's all of you guys, you talented writers. Let's leave Seth out of the mix there.
Shout out to Seth Poe.
Shout out to Seth Poe, who'd left us for Washington. He was out here with us catching Suns games. Now he's out there catching Bullets games, so I don't want to call him the
Bullets,
Wizards.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, appreciate you coming on. We'll definitely have you on throughout the season for a lot of meaningful Suns versus Lakers head-to-head matchups.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me on.
And that was Drew Garrison. Appreciate him coming on and giving some insight on the Los Angeles Lakers. Pretty cool that they got the NBA previews, like he said, coming up. So SBNation.com, the NBA page, check that out. I'm sure each of the teams will tag their team specifically preview when it comes up. But appreciate him coming on. That ends the divisional conference, or I should say the Pacific Division previews here for the Bright Side of the Sun podcast, looking at the Warriors, Lakers, Clippers, Kings, and the Suns. And it looks like, I mean, we're most of the teams, it feels like, are pretty realistic with their expectations. The Clippers are a legit championship contender. The Warriors are somewhere in the middle there. You know, some realistic expectations for them, growing pains with a young team. And then, you know, you have the combination of the Lakers, Suns, and the Kings, which are going to duke it out for top six picks. I mean, that's just being realistic with it. And the Lakers have some talented guys, but they're on the older end of the spectrum. The Kings have some talented guys, but they're on the younger end of the spectrum, and the Suns are just barely starting their rebuild. So Drew Garrison, or you're going to definitely see what a rebuilding process looks like over the next couple of years. The Suns have been fighting theirs, and the Lakers very similarly were fighting theirs, but then again, they had a Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, Dwight Howard carrot hanging at the end of the stick there that was within reach, but at the end of the day just didn't come together. So yeah, Lakers maybe 35-38 wins. That's probably realistic. Probably going to end up still being 10-plus more wins than the Phoenix Suns at the end of the day. You know, the Phoenix Suns are one of those teams that are at the very, very, very beginning of their real rebuilding stage. Philadelphia 76ers, Phoenix Suns, the two of the P's in the NBA. They're going to be two P's in a pod at the very bottom of the Western, or the NBA standings, I should say. And yeah, that's a wrap. We'll be back with episode 40 next week. Done with the Pacific Division preview, so we'll have something special actually next week. Going to mix it up and try and have a real fun podcast and, you know, getting everything ready. Training camp begins next week, media day on Monday. Check out Bright Side of the Sun starting on Monday all week. Definitely going to have nonstop coverage from training camp live, previewing the team, giving takes and whatnot from what we've seen from media day. And then the preseason starts the following week. So episode 40, I think, is going to be a real fun one. Come back next week. Check it out. For Chris Habas, this is the Bright Side of the Sun, or the Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. Nameless, as always, and we'll catch you guys next week.